It's time for Herd Mentality, the weekly episode where you control the discussion today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Thursday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. This episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the NFL. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. All right, folks, we've got some great herd mentality questions that have been submitted, so let's dive into them. The first one comes from Nick. Nick says, I've been thinking about this idea of investing significant money in special teams specialists who do not help the team on offense or defense. How much money can the Bills save if they cut them all? This is the question the devil's advocate in me is begging to ask. How did the Super Bowl champion special teams units rank in the last 10 years? Could that money be better spent on impact positions and rely on depth across the roster to be responsible for special teams? Or is the impact of specialists on the team really that crucial in winning it all? Really good question here from Nick, and it prompted me to do some research. So I have what you asked for, the last 10 Super Bowl winners, and where they ranked in terms of special teams DVOA. And so we'll get to that in just a second. But first, let's deal with the part of the question about, well, could the Bills cut all of the special teams only players and how much money could they save? Well, here's what's interesting about that. Pretty much all of the special teams only players have contracts that are expired. Tyler Medicavich, Tywan Jones, Jake Kumerow, Jaquan Johnson. Those are all unrestricted free agents. Those are your special teams only type players that you would be referring to, with the exception of only one player, and that's Saran Neal, who is under contract as a special teams only player that's not on a rookie deal. I'm not going to include guys like Baylen Spector and Terrell Bernard in this type of conversation. Those are rookie contracts. But in terms of a veteran paid special teams player, Saran Neal's the only one under contract. And so that's what makes this really fascinating, is it's not about cutting Medicavich, Jones, Kumerow, Johnson, and seeing what you can save. It's, well, can you justify bringing them back? As for Saran Neal, the Bills can cut him and save $2.3 million in cap space, but then you accumulate $1.1 million in dead cap space. And so would you like to have your special teams ace, the guy that's always leading your team in special teams tackles, plus your backup slot corner, or do you want the cap space? Those are the questions that Brandon Bean is facing, and then it also extends to Jones, Kumerow, Johnson. Those guys are all expired contracts, and those are the special teams-only type players. Now, as for Super Bowl winners and where their special teams units ranked, the best way that I could do this is by looking at DVOA, which ranks them in order of how good they were, and it includes all of it. It includes field goals made, punts, punt return, kick return, covering kicks, covering punts, all of that. It factors it all in there. And so this was what I thought was the best way to assess special teams rankings. So your last 10 Super Bowl winners and where they finished in special teams DVOA. The Chiefs this past year, 2022, they finished 19th. The 2021 Rams finished 4th in special teams DVOA. The 2020 Bucks, 26th. The 2019 Chiefs, 2nd. The 2018 Patriots, 16th. The 2017 Eagles, 16th. The 2016 Patriots, 3rd. The 2015 Broncos, 14th. The 2014 Patriots, 5. 2013 Seahawks, 5. So of the last 10 Super Bowl champions, 5 of them finished in the top 5 in special teams DVOA. Half of the last 10 Super Bowl champions had a top five special teams unit in terms of DVOA. You had four of them that ranked between 10 and 20, and then your outlier is your 2020 Bucks, who finished 26th in special teams DVOA. So I think that does tell us some good information there that, yeah, the best teams in terms of special teams, there's a fairly nice sample size of data here that indicates top five special teams is a common denominator in half of the last 10 Super Bowl champions. So I think this leans into a good team building philosophy that exists for the Bills that places an emphasis on special teams. Charles says, I believe the Tremaine Edmonds deal gets done personally. However, it's harder for me to reconcile spending so much on him after watching the Super Bowl. It seems during the playoffs when facing elite quarterbacks, most defenses are not as effective. Even during 13 seconds when we all felt the Bills were a better team, that was a shootout game led by our offense. Do you have any hesitation, not with Edmonds the player, but just committing so much cap to him when we could use that to help Josh and fortify the offense? Linebacker seems to be an area we can get impact for cheap, and if it means a big upgrade at offensive line, we have to at least consider moving on from Edmonds right. So I see where you're going with this. I think you can look at the Chiefs and realize that they're better on offense than they are on defense. And certainly they've made a calculated choice here this season to move on from a lot of veterans on defense and play young players. That's something that definitely happened. I would argue the 13 seconds game was lost because of the defense. Particularly the way they chose to play the game in the 13 seconds with just awful coverage shells that made it extremely easy for Patrick Mahomes to get the team down there in field goal range. But I do worry a lot about not having Tremaine Edmonds. Talked about this on the linebacker review this week. He missed the second half against Minnesota, then the Cleveland and Detroit games, and he also missed one other game. I think it was Pittsburgh. Sports Rock, at Sports Rock 2 on Twitter. So that's at Sports ROC and then the number 2. He put out a tweet on a Wednesday afternoon, and it said this. The Bills were 0.19 EPA worse against the pass when Tremaine Edmonds was off the field versus when he was on. That's the equivalent of going roughly from the fourth best pass defense to the 29th best pass defense. I remember it. I remember watching Jacoby Brissett and Jared Goff torch the Buffalo Bills in the middle of the field without Tremaine Edmonds in there. I remember how different the Bills defense looked in the second half against Minnesota without Tremaine Edmonds versus with him in the first half. Tremaine Edmonds is a big time impact player for this team. And so while I can understand wanting to lean into the offense, I really do understand that. And I think you can accomplish those goals. You need a left guard and then a slot receiver or maybe a wide receiver too, right? That's what you need on offense. But if you don't bring back Tremaine, I think you're putting yourself in a really difficult spot with how you want to play defense, even if it is expensive. I mean, we've talked about the draft develop re-sign strategy that exists in Buffalo. We've talked about his impact. He's young, 5 years of experience in the scheme, entering his age. Is it his age 25 season coming up? I mean, that's insane. So I would like to continue with Tremaine. I think he's a high-impact player for the Bills. And even when considering it through the lens of, hey, you feel like you got to have the offense to win the Super Bowl. Yeah, I agree. But I think you can accomplish your goals of bringing back Tremaine and then finding what you need on offense, which is a guard and a receiver, and probably bigger than anything, you need Josh Allen's elbow to be healthy, which it should be next year, because obviously that had a big impact on what the offense looked like down the stretch. And you need Ken Dorsey to settle in as the offensive coordinator. So I don't know that the opportunity cost concerns me that much. I get more concerned about who you're putting in at Mike linebacker that's going to provide the coverage ability that Tremaine Edmonds does in the middle of the field and how he impacts the way that offenses play against you. John says, after going to the Senior Bowl, what player jumped out to you as a fit for what Brandon Bean has typically been drawn to? I'll give you a few players here that stood out to me. And yeah, I was at the Senior Bowl and I was on the field for every practice and Brandon Bean was down there too. And I'll tell you where Brandon Bean's eyes were: O-line, D-line. They always are. And I've been on the field with Brandon Bean for the last several years at the Senior Bowl, and I'm always aware of what he's doing. He's watching O-line. He's watching D-line. And so I'll give you three players, two offensive linemen, one defensive lineman that I think fit the types of players I would anticipate the Bills being interested in. Two offensive linemen, one of them Minnesota center. I think he can play guard, no question. John Michael Schmitz. I think he might be a late first-round pick, definitely a second-round pick. Was awesome at the Senior Bowl, an experienced player at Minnesota. No-nonsense guy. Actually, I did some community service with him on Friday and got a chance to be around him for a while and was on the bus and was part of the event that he was at. He's a good dude. I think the Bills will like him a lot, and he's a good player at a position where they need a good player. I think he can be a left guard for you. And he's tall and athletic, right? I think it's been something that we've seen Brandon Bean gravitate towards with the offensive lineman he's brought in. And so I think the need, the person, the player, the skill set, it's all there. Another offensive lineman that I can see the Bills really liking is Cody Mauch from North Dakota State. Came to NDSU as a tight end, switched over to offensive tackle, was a really good left tackle for them. I don't know that he'll be a left tackle in the NFL. I think he's a left guard, which obviously the Bills need, or right guard. That's fine. But he played all five spots on that offensive line at the Senior Bowl. And he's a corn-fed Midwest kid that has some ruggedness about him, long hair, you know, that kind of guy. And I can see the Bills liking his athleticism, his upbringing, you know, Midwest, corn-fed. You know, they like that stuff. Small school, has earned everything that he's gotten. They're going to like that about him. And the last player I'll mention here is defensive tackle Keanu Benton from Wisconsin. Interior guy, great size. I think probably around 6'4", 315 pounds. You know, great frame. You love the body composition. And then, you know, he's a run defender and a pass rusher. He's got combinations with his hands. He's athletic. He's big. Also a two-time state finalist in wrestling in high school. And so, if the Bills were to go with a defensive tackle, I think he'd probably be a second round pick, or, you know, you would trade back a little bit from the first round to get him. I think Keanu Benton really fits from the Senior Bowl. So John Michael Schmitz, Cody Mauch, Keanu Benton are the three Senior Bowl guys that I think really stand out to me as players that I think Brandon Bean would be drawn to. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Folks, if you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want fat and calories, well, then you got to try Built Bars. These things are absolutely delicious. Well, what makes them good is, first of all, they're covered in 100% real chocolate, and the flavors are awesome. They have churro, peanut butter, brownie, coconut almond, so many great flavors. The list goes on and on. I really like the churro puffs. The coconut almond puffs are good, too. Cookies and cream, regular Built Bars are awesome. So many great flavors that I love, and I'm not sure how Built does it, but these are protein bars that taste like a candy bar. And they're healthy. They're good for you. Check out these macros. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, a whopping 17 grams of protein. And look, I've been telling you for years to go to Built.com to order them. You still can, but you can also go to Walmart and Sam's Club to pick up a box right off the shelf. So check them out. You'll thank me later. These are the best tasting protein bars on the planet. All right, let's get to the next batch of questions. We'll get to Michael here. Michael says, It's not our biggest need, and I'm not sure I would do it, but I've seen Texas running back Bijan Robinson mock to the Bills a few times. What do you think of this? And then Bijan is your highest rated running back since. All right, let's talk about Bijan Robinson a little bit. And I am not an enthusiast for drafting running backs in the first round. Not something I really like. That said, I think Bijan Robinson's one of the best three players in this draft. I think he's very clearly one of the three best football players in this draft, regardless of position. He is the highest rated running back for me since at least Saquon Barkley. I probably like I definitely like Bijan Robinson more than Saquon Barkley. I think Barkley's a rare dude in terms of the receiving ability, the size, the elusiveness, but I think Bijan's a much more polished runner in terms of vision and decision-making as a ball carrier with all the same size and athleticism, physicality, elusiveness, pass-catching skill that you get in a Saquon Barkley. He's special. He's really special. And so if you tell me that the Bills get him at 27, I don't think I'm going to argue with that. And I know that that might surprise some people, and the Bills have other needs at more important positions. But you're telling me you get a top three talent in this class at 27, it's going to make your offense more dynamic? I'm not going to fight that. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you. I would not be upset if Bijan Robinson was a pick at 27. Now, hopefully that comes with some answers that I like at guard and receiver and safety and some D-line depth. Like, I'm concerned about all of that too. But you talk about just getting good football players and making your team more dynamic. I mean, Bijan's special. So I'm not going to be mad if he was the pick at 27. And I know that probably surprises some people, but he's that type of talent. And I'll be honest with you, I feel comfortable saying that because I don't think there's a world where he gets to 27. There's so many teams that should really think about picking him much sooner. And so I don't think we're going to live in a world where that's a possibility. But if it is, I don't know if I'd be mad about it. Next one comes from EPEA, who says, you talked about Saron Neal being the nickel cornerback backup on your review series. Is that a position that Dane Jackson could move to as the reserve special teams position you mentioned for him? Not sure if that's really the same skill set as an outside corner, but I think Dane has more to offer our defense than Saron Neal does. I like this question. If you go back and read my scouting report on Dane Jackson, you'll see that I thought he was a slot corner in the NFL. And so I'm very comfortable with the idea of playing Dane Jackson in the slot. And so I think you can get a better backup to Taron Johnson and Dane Jackson, and I think you can get a good special teamer, maybe not as good as Saron Neal. And so if that's your path to move on for Saron Neal, okay, that's fine. The question that I would then return is, who's your primary backup at corner? Because if we're going to live in this world where Benford goes to safety, I think you probably have to keep him at corner in this world because you need somebody you can rely on behind White and Elam. And so the layer to this, like, I'm with you. Okay, Dane Jackson, he's back. He's your backup slot corner, provides good depth and special teams contributions. All right, I'm there with you. But I need to know what the other dominoes here are in terms of safety and depth at outside corner. But I'm picking up what you're laying down here, and I think the spirit of what you're asking here is, can Dane Jackson fill that type of role, and can he play in the slot? And I think he absolutely can. The next one comes from Dean. Dean says, listening to Herd Mentality this morning, you made a comment around the way the Chiefs have drafted to help Mahomes. They seem to have drafted a number of people that are ready to contribute now in their first year. They may not have the highest ceiling, but they are NFL ready now. Got me thinking about the draft philosophy and coaching philosophy of the Bills and if that needs to change the next few years. Bills typically draft high potential players that need some time to develop. The coaching staff is also very hesitant to play their rookies significant minutes for the most part. Being $20 million over the cap like we are going to have to rely on some rookies the next couple of years if we want to keep this core team at a Super Bowl contending level. We don't draft players that are ready to go now, then our only option is to find some low-cost free agents and hope they play well above their contract, which is also a risk. What are your thoughts on this? I don't think we can reach our peak if we're always drafting to have players ready 2 to 3 years from now. It's a good question, Dean. There's a lot. I could probably do an entire episode on this. Maybe I will. The Chiefs have done a phenomenal job of having big ticket players. They have lots of expensive players on their roster. Don't get it twisted. Patrick Mahomes, Joe Tooney, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, Frank Clark. Those are very expensive players. Those are really good players. But where I think they've done a better job than the Bills is surrounding those big ticket players with players on rookie deals that are contributing in a meaningful way. It's not close. And so that's what the Bills have to do. They have to be able to find these rookie deal contributors that perform better than the ones that they have. They have to be better than Epinesa and Basham as these fill-in type rookies, right? And I think there's Spencer Brown, right? Another inconsistent player. I see where you're going with this. And I think there's a lot to like about betting on traits and developing and getting a big reward for a player. But there's also a risk associated. If you only draft high floor players and you don't really lean into the bet on traits and high ceiling, I think you put yourself in a tough spot too. And I don't know that I would agree with that with you that the Chiefs are drafting high floor players. I think they're taking swings too. I do. And I think you have to take swings at the right place. I mean, you look at a guy like Josh Williams. This guy's out of Fayetteville State starting at corner in the Super Bowl for the Chiefs. So, I mean, that's a swing. That's a toolsy swing that looks like it's going to work out for him. But, yeah, I think at its core, this is the Bills are going to have to become more willing to play young players and willing to be more calculated with when to take high-ceiling players but maybe low-floor players. So, yeah, I think there's some adaptation that has to happen here. And if I do this episode on the Chiefs, one thing I'll really get into is Brett Veach, their GM, who's convinced me he's the best GM in the NFL, how willing he's been to be honest about his roster and rebuild position groups. This team traded away Tyreek Hill. They let Tyrann Mathieu walk in free agency. They cut Rashad Fenton. These are important players for them over the years. We'll move on, right? No questions about it. And they've literally went into off seasons where they completely rebuilt their offensive line, completely rebuilt their secondary, completely rebuilt their wide receiver core. And having a good, honest assessment about your roster, having stable coordinators, right? Spags has been their DC forever, and then Bieniemy/Reed have been running this offense forever. And I think when you have that consistency with these coordinators, it allows you to acclimate players and find roles and get the most out of players quicker. And so I think their infrastructure is every bit as important as their team building philosophies, because I think they go hand in hand. I think the infrastructure allows their team building philosophies to work. Oh, by the way, having 15 at quarterback certainly helps too. So maybe we'll flesh this out in a big discussion, because I have a lot to say about this. But as you present this question and my head starts spinning, those are the thoughts in my head. Next one comes from Edgar, who says, on this list of wide receivers, who do you want the Bills to target? And then it's salary projections on an average annual value, courtesy of SpotRack. And the players I'm given to choose from are DJ Chark at $9.5 million per season, Alan Lazard, $12.5 million, Jacoby Myers, $12.5 million, Juju Smith-Schuster, $14.6 million, Mecole Hardman, $10.3 million, Paris Campbell, $2.5 million. These don't excite me at all. None of these players excite me at all. Maybe Paris Campbell, but that guy's always hurt. Always hurt. I think the other guys are all massive overpays. What I would like is Cole Beasley back in the slot and a top three round pick. That's what I want to see. And Josh Allen's elbow be healthy and Ken Dorsey to find his rhythm. I think that's what I want. I don't want any of this. I don't want Juju at $14.6 million or Jacoby Myers at $12.5 million or Alan Lazard at $12.5 million. Alan Lazard, you've got Gabe Davis. DJ Chark, that's interesting, but kind of a one-trick pony, $10 million. I don't know. I don't think the Bills are in position to give market deals to these types of players. Get Cole Beasley back for whatever you gave Jamison Crowder last year and draft a receiver in the first three rounds and put that together with Davis, Diggs, and Khalil Shakir and go score some points. That's the way I see it. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores and threes drained. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. So don't miss your chance right now to get your no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Got a few more to get to here today. The next one comes from Daniel. Daniel says, how many veteran safeties are on the market right now? Benford at safety makes me nervous. Not that he's a bad player. Really, he's been a pleasant surprise. A diamond in the rough kind of deal, but doesn't so much of the scheme depend on solid safety play, as he's never even played the position and was a sixth rounder. The scheme puts a lot of pressure on key players, most importantly Hyde, Poyer, Edmonds, and Taron Johnson, in my opinion. Poyer is a big hole to fill. We saw how integral safeties are to the scheme when ours were injured last year. Could you see Bean spending in free agency on a safety? So three things that I think I want to respond to here. First is, do I think Brandon Bean would spend in free agency on a safety? I do think he would, because he has. He's paid Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer market deals more than once. We've seen him do this. Okay, so I do think that it's a possibility because he has. Your comment about being nervous about Christian Benford because he's a sixth-rounder that hasn't played corner. Fair enough. Jordan Poyer, seventh-rounder that never played safety. Micah Hyde, fifth-rounder that never played safety. So Christian Benford, sixth-rounder that's never played safety. I don't know. I don't know how much of a concern I have about that. I think Sean McDermott's made a career out of these types of players coming in at safety and getting good production. I mean, go back to Carolina. Mike Mitchell's an example, Kirk Coleman, guys that didn't have a whole lot on their resume coming in and being good safeties. So that certainly gives me some hesitation, but it doesn't preclude me from getting excited. I like the idea of Benford at safety. Like I said, I don't think you go into this thing with all your eggs in that basket. That comes with bringing back Dean Marlowe. So you have Dean Marlowe and Christian Benford in a camp battle with Micah Hyde and then whatever Jared Maiden, Cam Lewis type player as your safety four. And then kind of the point about if I could see Bean spending on a veteran free agent. I don't know, if you're going to spend big on a free agent safety, just sign Jordan Poyer. That's what I'd do. But if there's other names, I mean, if Poyer's going to get the deal he thinks he's going to get, and that's 12, 13, 14, 15 million a season, would you like to give Von Bell 8, Juan Thornhill 7, Terrell Edmonds 6, Nasir Adderley 8? Right, like I think you can live in that world too. So there's options. But it'd be really strange to me if the Bills went after a veteran safety and committed sizable money to them if it wasn't Jordan Poyer. Let's move on to the next one here from Chris. Chris says, in retrospect, given the comments about running out of gas, how much did losing the first round bye contribute to the Bills' disappointing final game? Now that this was not that this was on the table, but had we had the option of trading that first round bye for playing the Chiefs in Arrowhead or even the Bengals in Cincinnati, would you have taken it? Yes, I absolutely would have. The most important thing, what was always the most important thing for the NFL to sort out after canceling the Bengals and Bills game and not rescheduling it, was the bye. It wasn't home field advantage. Home field advantage matters, but the bye was always bigger. You can't be eliminated when you have a bye. And so the bye put the Chiefs in position to have a bye and rest while other teams are playing and then play the Jaguars. And the Bills had to play a game against Miami and then play the Bengals. The bye was always more important than the home field. And go back and think about this Super Bowl that we just watched between the Chiefs and the Eagles. Every single player was available for those teams, healthy. Everybody. There was no player of consequence that wasn't available. And that doesn't mean it didn't have bumps and bruises along the season and guys didn't have to miss games. But when it came down to it, all of their guys were available and ready to play. There was healthy scratches across the board for both teams. They weren't sitting there without Micah Hyde and Von Miller and Daquan Jones. You got to be healthy, and that bye week contributed to both of those teams who got to enjoy a bye. Philly comes off the bye and gets to host the Giants. Health matters. That bye was always bigger. And so the reality of what happened as a result of Week 17 being canceled is that the Bills and the Bengals were given losses. And it created an unfair advantage for Kansas City, who, oh, by the way, lost to the Bills and Bengals during the regular season. Completely unfair. I know that it seems crazy to think that the Bills beat the Chiefs, because I feel like the way that we're talking about this team, that didn't happen, but it did. The Bills beat the Chiefs in Kansas City the last 2 years during the regular season. But the Bengals' playoff loss has put us in a complete tizzy. And I understand it to an extent, but let's not act like we're not talking about a good Buffalo Bills football team. It's won the division 3 years in a row that has the second most wins in the NFL over the last three seasons. That's one of only two teams in the league that's won playoff games the last 3 years. Like, can we act like there's something good going on with the Buffalo Bills? But yes, back to the point here, the bye was always the bigger deal. And everybody got caught, when I say everybody, the NFL got caught up in home field advantage. And the reality is, the Bills and Bengals were given a loss. Last one of the day comes from Sean. This is an interesting question. He says, thanks for the great content on both Locked On Bills and Draft Dudes. Part of my daily routine is listening to Locked On Bills while sifting through email or driving to get my daughter from school and listening to Draft Dudes while I cook dinner. You help keep me sane and informed, and I truly appreciate everything you do. For Herd Mentality, I was hoping to hear about your daily routine and schedule as it pertains to film, work, radio spots, and both your podcast. How do you fit all of these in an average day with enough time for editing and publishing, family and film study, which I would think takes extreme concentration, rewinding, and lots of notes? Appreciate this, Sean. And I've talked a little bit about my daily routine in the past in the podcast, and so I'll take this opportunity to discuss it now. I'm a very process-oriented person. Every day that I live is planned to the minute. And my main objective every day that I work, which is Monday through Friday, my main objective every day is to start early, avoid distractions, and get ahead of the daily chaos that happens every single day. And so if I were to walk you through a typical work day for me, my alarm goes off at 5 a.m. Typically, I'm awake before that because I'm so used to waking up at 5 a.m. And then I'm in my office at my right here, this desk, working by 5:15 a.m. And so how do I achieve that? Well, there's no morning scroll. I don't wake up and start scrolling social media or looking at anything on my phone. I get up, I use the restroom, I let the dogs out, I make a cup of coffee, and I'm at my desk by 5:15 a.m. every single day, working on the most important task that I have to complete that day. And so my first work block is 5:15 to 8:15. And this is my most important window of the day. There's no distractions. You know, people aren't texting me. People aren't really active on social media. My wife and daughter, they're asleep, right? So this is my most impactful stretch of the day where I really get ahead of everything. And so inevitably throughout the day, chaos is going to happen. Distractions are going to happen. But if I take that time, that first 3 hours, and dial in and really focus on the most important things that I have to do that day, it sets me up for success the rest of the day, and I don't have to chase my tail. So from 5:15 to 8:15 is my first work block. And so within this could be scouting reports. It could be an article that I have to write. It's usually some type of content. And with the content comes research, whether it's film or looking stuff up and analyzing data. Then from 8:15, my daughter comes downstairs at 8:15. And from 8:15 to 8:45, I will have breakfast with my daughter and we'll play for a little bit. And then my wife takes her to preschool around 8:45, 8:50. So then from 9 to 11, I have my next, I guess, content block, where I finish up on any time-sensitive tasks that weren't completed in the first three-hour block. And then I also do my podcast prep for Draft Dudes. And we also have a staff meeting every day at noon. And so I do all my prep for the meeting during this 9 to 11 block. So it's leftover content from the first block, Draft Dudes prep, meeting prep from 9 to 11. 11 to 12, I record Draft Dudes with Kyle Krabs and Chris Schubert. From 12 to 1, I go to the staff meeting. And that's our TDN Draft Network. Every day we have a staff meeting. And so this is when we present the players that we wrote scouting reports on. Certain days you're assigned to give an update on NFL teams. And so, you know, on any given day, I could be talking about a scouting report that I wrote on a player or updating the team needs for the Cincinnati Bengals. And we discuss these things as a staff. And so we do that for an hour. Then from 1 to 3 is Locked On Bills time, where I will do my prep, record, publishing, and editing. And then from 3 to 4 is planning and administrative work. And so I coordinate our scouting efforts with the Draft Network. So I'll set our focus for the next day for scouting reports with the staff, let them know, you know, what players to be working on. There's always a lot of administrative work that goes with what I do. It's not all, you know, film and research and content. There's administrative stuff that goes into it. So I handle that from 3 to 4, and I also plan my next day. And then I'm pretty much done working, usually around 3:30, 4 o'clock. From 4:30 to 6, I do CrossFit. I started doing that in December, have really enjoyed that so far. And so that's a new staple of my day. From 6 to 8, have dinner and family time. Daughter usually goes to sleep around 8. And then, you know, after that, I hang out with my wife. And I'm usually down for the night by 10 or 10:30 and wake up and do it all again. So Monday through Friday, that's pretty much my day, with the exception of Friday. When we're done with the staff meeting at 1, I'm usually done for the day at 1 o'clock. But I've been in this routine for several years now. I mean, the weekends are open, right? So Saturdays and Sundays, I hang out with my daughter and my wife and do stuff that people do, right? Go to community things, go shopping, stuff around the house, all that kind of stuff. But this has been a routine that I've been in for several years now. I would say it's changed my life. I spent a lot of time without structure, and every day just chasing my tail. And the truth is that I thrive within structure. That's one thing that I've learned about myself. And so it allows me to focus on priorities and keep myself on schedule, because at the end of the day, I don't want to have my entire identity be in this work. You know, I want to make sure that I'm done and I can take care of myself and I can take care of my family and be present in all aspects of my life. And so that being a priority allows me to create that structure and operate within that destruction, but in that structure. But the key is you have to stay focused. You can't have distractions. You have to have very limited social media time. I don't take any unscheduled phone calls. And one thing that I read, and you can look this up, the University of California, Irvine, they did a study that found that it takes an average of 23 minutes to get back on task after an interruption. And some say it's closer to 30. So anytime that you do something that takes away from the task that you're working on, whether it's you want to scroll social media, you want to go get a snack, you want to go make a cup of coffee, I work from home, so let the dogs out, do a switch over the laundry, whatever it is. 23 minutes. You can only do that so many times in a day, and you're losing hours. And so I fight really, really hard against that type of stuff. And that allows me to be committed in every area that I want to be, whether that's work and, of course, being a husband and a father, which is way more important than anything that I do work-wise. And so it all has to go together. I found that structure works for me and I stay committed to it. And it's, when I first started doing it, it was hard. Now it's easy. Now I couldn't imagine it not being that way. I couldn't imagine not waking up and getting to work, getting my stuff done and planning out my day the way that I do. So I've talked to a lot of people because I brought this up a few times on the podcast, and there's always good correspondence back and forth. And so it's not all a one size fits all type thing, but if you're committed to waking up early, limiting your distractions, getting ahead of the chaos of the day, and keeping your priorities in line, that structure, that those core philosophies are going to allow you to structure your days in a way that you can get a lot done and still be a very, very present husband and father or wife or mother, whatever you have going on in your life. So if you have, look, hit me up. I love talking about this stuff. So If you have questions, be happy to share my experiences. I'm not an expert on it, but I read a book called The Perfect Day Formula by Craig Ballantyne. And not that I do every single thing that that book says, but I've implemented a lot of the core philosophies, and it's allowed me to be unbelievably productive, but also have exactly the balance that I want with my family as well. So there you have it. All right, folks, that's it for today on the podcast. Tomorrow, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk about Brandon Bean's off-season to-do list. That's coming up tomorrow, so don't miss it. Make sure that you're subscribed. We'd love it if you took a second to rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great rest of your day. Go Bills! I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.